We go through chapter 12. You know, I've got a chance to teach this with a high school and got a chance to sit with Jackie a few times over this. And it's always amazing. Every time I read the Bible, even on chapters or concepts that I think I got down, it seems like God is always opening my eyes to the truths about the things in the Bible and begin to see things that I didn't see before. And so tonight, as we go through, I don't want to be dogmatic about some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight, but I want to be faithful with what I feel God is showing me through these particular sections of Scripture. So as we come into this, as we come into chapter 12, it was really kind of tough when I got a chance to teach on chapter 11 because, man, when you're going through Revelation, you're always setting yourself up for the next chapter. And so there's little dots and pieces that you got to hit along the way to emphasize the next concepts. And so as Jackie's kind of thrown me in a couple times, it feels like the touchdown pass is being passed. And it's like, whoa, kind of bobbling it a little bit. But so as we go through tonight, just ask for your mercy. And if you have questions, which I would be surprised if you didn't, be more than happy to meet with you after, or Jackie will be back Friday. So. That being said, we're going to jump into chapter 12, the book of Revelation. Here we go. It says, "Now a great sign appeared in the heavens, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then, being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain and gave birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his heads. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she bore a male child who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days." And so as we kind of get going on this, I wanted to, you know, take a moment as we start going through and really just start off with the first couple words. "Now a great sign appeared in heaven." And I want to kind of go through the understanding of what a sign is there for, right? So help me out, guys. Why do we put signs places? Right. So you don't do whatever the sign's telling you not to do, right? We have a sign in the middle of the street when we come to an intersection, right? It's either red or green or yellow. What does red mean? What does green mean? You guys are good. What is yellow? Hurry up. So signs are there to give information that either we should be comprehending of. We should understand when a sign is given, it's given to a people or a person that we should know what that sign means, right? I have signs that my wife gives me when we're arguing. Some of them are hand gestures. Yeah, she gives me signs, but there's signs as we begin to argue or any other relationship that we hopefully have sometimes, that there's signs that that's going to happen, right? There's signs that a fight's brewing. There's signs that are coming up. And I don't want you to miss that when he's talking about this great sign appearing, this sign is a sign that all the Jews are going to be able to pick up on. It's tough for us. We're going to go through and lay out some of the context of what those signs are. But I don't want to lose context that the signs are there for a reason and the signs make sense to them, right? It's no good putting a sign that doesn't make sense, right? I went to Israel and it was literally crazy. There was signs all over the place and people driving like 900 miles an hour. I don't think they have a speed limit in Jordan. You know, they just don't. It's like there's no signs. It's just survive. That's like the goal. But so here we are, and there's these signs that are appearing in the heavens. Now, I want to just kind of go back as we talk about signs. I want to just take a step back and realize that signs don't always appear exactly how we would anticipate that sign coming. So Jesus is doing all these miracles, and the Pharisees want a sign, right? I would have thought they got one. But Jesus said, no sign will be given to this generation except one. Okay? What was that sign? Sign of Jonah, right? So you're expecting Jesus any day to get eaten by a whale, right? Like, you can't walk on the beach, Jesus, because you're going to get eaten by a whale. That's the sign of Jonah. 3 days, you'll be spit out in Nineveh. We'll wait for you there, right? That's not, the sign doesn't always take place exactly how the pieces come, but the sign of Jonah was that Jesus Christ was going to spend 3 days and three nights in the belly of the earth, just like Jonah spent 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale, okay? Then he was brought back, just like Jonah was brought back. So as we go through these signs, realize these signs that they're appearing in the sky are I guess prequel would be the best way to make it understand. These are prequels of events that have happened in your history that should be you should notice. It should come up in your thing. So when the Jews saw Jesus resurrect on the third day, do you think they comprehended the concept of the sign of Jonah? I think they did. I think there was all kinds of stuff going off in their brain going, oh, you ever have those moments with God? I wake up every day and it's like that. I'm a simple man though. So. Man, you are good. But so these are signs that are appearing in heaven. And so as we go through these particular signs, I want to make sure that we understand that the Jews should know what they are. They should be an aha moment for them. And the signs are there for what? A response, right? A response is meant to, for the sign of Jonah, when they saw the sign of Jonah, when Jesus Christ rose from the dead, what did it make the, I mean, essentially, the first 10 chapters of the book of Acts is God saving the Jews, right? All the people that are getting saved in the book of Acts, the first 10 chapters are all Jewish. So when Jesus rose from the dead, it was an aha, and they were forced to respond. So I just kind of prefacing that with this great sign that appears. It says, in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon, and under her feet, clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Who is this? It's Israel, yeah. We see it all the time. We see when Joseph is having his dreams, he comes in to his dad and he says, Dad, I had a dream. The sun and the moon bowed down to me and the 12 stars bowed down to me. And his dad pretty much hits it on the head. Well, are me and your mom and your 12 brothers or 11 brothers going to bow down to you? Yeah, Joseph, that's not cool. So we have defined this particular vision. But I wanted to just kind of take it a little bit further is that as we start going through here, I want to put a pinpoint on who this woman is. So this is a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a garland with 12 stars. I'm going to call this believing Israel. So I'm going to do a lot of this tonight. I'm hoping you're going to understand me. I'm going to put these guys over here. This is believing Israel. Israel who recognizes that Jesus came, right? Because all the first 10 chapters of the book of Acts, these are Jews getting the aha moment and seeing that Jesus is the Messiah and that Jesus was the one. So as we name these, I'm going to say they're clothed in the sun. They're clothed in God's righteousness. These people are believing Israel. And we're going to see in just a couple chapters, I think there's another group and that they're both described as women and both of them, I believe, are Jews. I'm going to let Jackie go into that later on. But we have the woman who rides the beast. And it's interesting at this particular moment, I think this is where the delineation between the woman clothed in the sun and the woman who rides the beast, where those two parties come from. One of them is believing Israel, set apart by God. In the Bible, we're going to call them the 144,000. And then we have a group of non-believing Israel who's going to be convinced that the Antichrist is the guy who's taken over, and they put their faith and trust with him. So I'm just separating this two. So in this vision, we'll get to it. Hopefully we'll explain it a little better. But this woman is believing Israel. This is Israel in the past. Okay? This is believing Israel in the past. It says, then being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain and gave birth. So who is she giving birth to? She's giving birth to Jesus. So the woman in the vision, in the sign in the sky, is a picture of the time when Jesus was coming into this world, in his birth. What did the nation of Israel look like at that time? Were they all just happy-go-lucky and everybody was believing in God and everything was going good? There was a whole bunch of craziness going on, right? Caiaphas is in charge. Essentially, Jesus goes in and, you know, cracks the whip and drives out the money changers. The nation of Israel is in utter chaos. But who does God see? God sees the remnant that he has in there. He sees those ones chosen, those ones covered in God's light, awaiting the Messiah. And that's who we're going to be talking about tonight. And that group of people that God is going to be drawing out in the past is going to give us a sign for those people in the future. But she's with child. She's with the Christ child. The nation of Israel is the one who is promised, right? All the way back in the time of Jacob. So Jacob, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all three get the promise that one day all the nations of the world will be blessed because of your lineage. And that promise is the promise that the Messiah would one day come and he'd rule. So that's the first sign that we have, this nation of believing Israel. The second one, it says, another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his head. Any wonder who that is? It's Michael the Archangel. No, yeah, we all pretty much know who the fiery dragon is, right? Fiery dragon. If you look just over in the same chapter, verse 9, it says, "And so the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world." Just in case there was any doubt. So we have this great sign appearing that there was this believing group of Israelites awaiting the Messiah. And here we have the fiery dragon who's appearing to, having 7 horns and 10 diadems. "And this tail drew a third of the stars from heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as it was born." So let's look through history. Throughout history, the dragon has always been trying to squelch this promise that God gave. It's called the Proto-Evangelicum. It's listed all the way back in the book of Genesis, at the very beginning, when Eve was given her promise. She said, one day, this is Jason phrasing, your child, the Messiah, is going to come, and he's going to crush the head of the serpent, but he's going to do what? Bruise the heel, right? So all the way from back then, we have, you know, all the way throughout history, we see Satan trying to stop this prophecy from coming true. In the land of Egypt, what happened? We see them trying to kill the babies, trying to drive them out. What happens when they persecute them in the land of Egypt? They just multiply more. You can't stop this. If you look at when Jesus was born, when King Herod was there, he knew the Messiah was supposed to be born in Bethlehem, and he tells the wise men, "Hey, when you find the Messiah, let me know so I can worship too." But we know the wise men didn't return to him, and what did Herod do? He tried to kill all the babies 2 years and down. So it's been from the very beginning, all the way back in Genesis chapter 3, that Satan has been trying to do this very thing. His goal is to stop the Messiah from coming, to stop the things that God has foretold, and to stop the promise of the redemption. Without Jesus, let's make it easy, we don't make it, right? Anybody getting on their own? Maybe Rick, I don't know. You seem like a pretty good guy. No, you're not getting there on your own. Yeah, none of us are. Yeah, without him, if he can stop that, and there's a few times in the history where the nation of Israel is whittled down to a small group. So he's trying to do that. It says, to devour her child as soon as he was born. Verse 5, "And she bore a male child who was to rule all of the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne." So when do we see Jesus, that's the child, when do we see him caught up and sent up to his throne, right? Anybody? His ascension, right? So after he's crucified, Jesus ascends into heaven. Actually, it's crazy because all the disciples and all the people who were kind of following him are just standing there like looking up at heaven, and an angel has to come and go, "Shut your mouth, let's get back to work and do the things that God talked to you. What are you guys looking up here? Don't you know One day he's going to come, but it's not going to be right now. Do the things he's told you to do. And so, again, we have this sign of this child, the one who's going to rule, the Messiah, ascending into heaven. And it says, then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that she and they should feed her for 1,260 days. Now, when we look at this whole picture, when does most of this stuff transpire? We're talking about this particular time we're talking about right now is right dead center in the middle of the tribulation. So we have 3.5 years where there's relative peace, and then we have what we call the Great Tribulation is the last 3.5 years. And we're time frame wise, we're right dead smack in the middle of that. What are all the signs of? If you look at all of these signs, all of these signs are things that took place when Jesus was here. And so we have a group of guys that are called all millennialists or can't remember what the other group is called. But they believe that essentially, and this is where we get the concept of mid-trib, this is where we get the concept that all of these things have already taken place. As they read chapter 12, they believe the book of Revelation is taking place back when Jesus was walking around. But I think the reason why he puts all this stuff in here is to give us a sign. All of the stuff that we see that's going on in the nation of Israel is a sign for what's going to happen at this midpoint in the tribulation. So let's take a step back. We know that when Jesus showed up on the scene, he came and he split the nation of Israel into two pieces. As he's coming and ministering and declaring the gospel that Jesus Christ has, that he had come to die and to do all the stuff that he did, that it created a rift between the nation of Israel. We had those Jews who believed the things that he said and became followers of God, Jesus Christ. We see, you know, we essentially, when all of this was going on, the Jews, what we would consider Christian was actually a sect of Judaism. And it wasn't until chapter 10 that we're, you know, basically the Gentiles start being saved in Acts, that would be the Christian movement that we would kind of be a part of. But as he's laying this down, when Jesus came, he drew a line in the sand and he says, if you were of God, you're going to follow, you're going to know, you're going to recognize me as being of God, right? What happens when Nicodemus comes in to talk to Jesus? He says, man, we know that you're from God. Because there's no one who could do the miracles and the things you're doing if he wasn't from God. But the problem we have with you, and this is paraphrasing again, is that you're kind of weird. You're kind of doing these weird things, and you're telling us to, you're talking about that the temple is going to be destroyed in Matthew 24. And I don't mean to sound bad, that's kind of crazy talk. Because the temple is where they worshiped. But when Jesus Christ came, he was making a line in the sand and he was dividing his people. He was drawing out his remnant. And we see that with all the people who get saved. When the day of Pentecost, when the fiery tongues appeared above their heads, how many people got saved? It's 5,000, right? 5,000 men were baptized. Well, it's amazing. All of those men were Jews. Every single one of them. And as this is going on, he's drawing this line in the sand between believing Israel and non-believing Israel. When the veil was torn, what did the Jews do? When Jesus Christ rose from the dead and he died on the cross and the veil was torn in two and the Holy of Holies was exposed and it's like, oh, that's got to be scary. What did the Jews do? Same thing we all try to do a lot of times. We go back and I really like this system and this is working for me, so I'm going to go back and sew that veil back up. they try to continue on with their belief system after this whole thing. And if you look at what's going to happen to this group of people in this at this midway point at the center of the tribulation, they're all worshiping. We just had 3.5 years where the two witnesses were out preaching out in front of the synagogue or in front of the temple, and all of the nation of Israel is worshiping at this new temple that is built for 3.5 years. All of the people are worshiping there. And it's funny, when the Antichrist comes in, he does the exact same thing. He draws a line in the sand. And then as he comes in and declares himself to be God, we can flip over to Matthew 24 and pick up a little bit of what it says. Verse 15, 24, Great Tribulation. It says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads this, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let them who are on the housetops and not come down and take anything out of their houses. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant, to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that the flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be a great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Then, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not go or do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders, so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. So we can see that at this pivotal moment, as the Antichrist comes in at this point, the abomination of desolation happens. So what's going on? We have these two witnesses and all of the nation of Israel worshiping at the temple again, worshiping God. Everything seems to be going really smooth. The Antichrist comes in. There's a split that goes down, and he says, I'm God. And God says, man, when that happens, believing Israel, the remnant of who is that woman clothed in white or clothed in the sun and with the moon under her feet, that woman is supposed to leave. But it's interesting, we're going to see that I believe that not all the people leave. Not all the... It's not a split drawn right down the middle, but it's interesting that that's the case. And so it's funny, as we're going to see, as Satan is cast down, I'm not sure exactly when that sign coincides with the death of the two witnesses. But let me finish reading. Verse 7, it says, and war broke out in heaven. So all of the things through chapter 6 are signs that they should see and they should recognize. And they should tell them to do something. Here's the reality in verse 7 through the rest of the chapter of what happened. And war broke out in heaven, and Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail. Nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, the serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore, rejoice, O heaven, and you who dwell in them. And woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because you know, because he knows that he has a short time. So, how do I see all these pieces coming together as this event in the middle of the tribulation happens? Michael stands up and he tells, Jesus tells Michael, hey, I'm tired of hearing this guy's lip. I love the way Jackie describes it. It's always kind of like Michael's kind of beefy, and he's like, finally says, all right, Michael, it's time to shut this guy up. He grabs this guy and he tosses him out of heaven. And where does he go? He goes to the earth. And as he's standing there on the earth, his goal is going to be, we're going to see in just a little bit of time, his goal is to do the exact same thing, to devour and to change the promises that God has laid down. And what was the sign? The sign was that the believing Israel is going to be separated. What do we see as they come back, as Satan is cast down? I think right in this middle point is where I think Satan's casting down correlates to the death of the two witnesses. His casting down, Satan is given power over the two witnesses. They die. As they die, it's been 3 days, right? Everybody's having a party back in chapter 11. After 3 days, what happens to them? The breath of life comes back to them. They raise up in newness of life. They're walking around. That'd be kind of freaky. And then what happens to them? God says, come up here. And they ascend into heaven the exact same way that Jesus Christ did. The exact same way. So as we're looking at this, as he's putting all these signs together, I think the point of the first six verses is that these are going to be signs that happen. One, that the nation of Israel is going to be sifted. It's going to be separated. The second thing is that she's going to be anticipating, for them, they were anticipating the Messiah. In this one, what are as these believers, they've recognized who Jesus is, what are they waiting for then? They're waiting for his return, right? So you got believing Israel in two parts. One, believing that Jesus came in this particular one, in the reality, not the sign. They're waiting for his second coming. They've recognized that he was the Messiah. And now they're separated. And I believe it's that 144,000. And essentially, they go off into the wilderness and are protected. But it's interesting. It says the serpent, the sign was that the serpent of old was going to devour the promise. It was going to try to get rid of all this stuff. And what are we going to see in, if we go through just a little bit more, verse 17 towards the end, it says, and the dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her offspring. So, and I'm sorry, verse 16, but the earth, wow, it's all the way back, 13, I'll come back to it. My point is that, read my mind, it's easier. It's a short read, you'll be fine. My point is that the signs that are there in what happened with Jesus all of a sudden become alive in the things that they're seeing. All of a sudden, they're seeing these two men who were dead, and all of a sudden, they're ascending into heaven. That should have been a red flag. That's the signs I think they're talking about as they're coming in here. And the signs that, in verse 6, that God is going to provide them a way to sustain that. So let's keep going down the page here. Has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of his testimony, by word of their testimony. And they did not love their lives to the end. Therefore rejoice, O heaven, and those who dwell in it. And woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea. For the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. Verse 13, it says, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who had given birth to the male child. When he comes, and these guys are standing there proclaiming God and doing all these crazy miracles, he comes after those two witnesses. This is how I'm putting it together. He goes after it. It says, but and the nation of Israel, the believing nation of Israel. That's why Jesus tells them in chapter 24 of Matthew to run and flee, because Satan's coming after them. So here's where he does it. It says, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who had given birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of an eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time's time and a half time from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. So we see in this particular time that there's no difference. The signs should point to the exact same thing that's going to happen. What has the dragon always been doing? It's been trying to stop the forward march of what the woman's goal, what the woman's job was to do. And it's interesting, when we look through Scripture, there's a group of Jews that are allowed, that God brings all the way through the tribulation. And there's only one group, we've talked about it, and it's the 144,000. None of the other people does God promise that he's going to sustain through the entire tribulation. And so when I look at that 144,000, I really believe that's the remnant. That's the division. That 144,000 that has come out is going to be the ones that escape into the wilderness. If you look back in Exodus, when God was describing how he saved the nation of Israel from the land of Egypt, he talks that how he saved them was he mounted them up on eagle's wings. And that he pulled them out of Egypt on eagle's wings. And when we look at that, I don't know exactly how God's going to save them. I'm not sure exactly how God is going to keep that 144,000. When we went to Israel, we got a chance to go to Jordan, which is right next door. And we talked about a place called Petra. So Petra is called the Rock. And it's where a lot of people seem to think the Jews are going to run and hide. I don't mean to sound bad. Petra is the scariest place I would ever imagine in a flood. If there's like one little channel, it's like 12 feet wide. And I'm pretty sure if it was a flood coming after you, I would not want to go to Petra. It doesn't seem like that'd be that scary of a place or that hard of a place to destroy if you really wanted to. But that's a place that they, some people think that they're going. I'm not really sure exactly where they're going to end up or how they're going to get there. But I do know that God is when those believing Israelites leave, according to Matthew 24, when they leave, God is going to bring them all the way through to the end. He's not going to drop them off halfway and not take care of them. They're going to be, in fact, those are going to be the Jews that enter the millennial reign when Jesus comes back and sets his foot down on the top of Mount Olives and splits it in half and starts that whole deal. So this is what the serpent's going to continue doing. Verse 16, then the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and who have the testimony of Jesus Christ. When Satan is unable to go after those 144,000 Jews, when God does not allow him to basically take them, what does he do? He goes back and circles around and gets all of the people who they've been witnessing to for the last... Remember, how long were they witnessing? How long were the two witnesses witnessing? 3.5 years. There's converts out of that. There's as they go and they leave into the wherever the wilderness is, as they go, are they going to be continually sharing the gospel as they go? The whole time. At the end, we talks about in verse 9, might be chapter 7. At the end of chapter 7, it talks about an innumerable host that was with the 144,000. I believe those are all people that those Jews impacted their life, but I believe that as those men and women come forward in Christ, every one of them will find a death, a martyr's death in Christ. I think every one of them is going to, that's where we see those saints under the altar crying out, God, when are you going to avenge our blood? I think that's how all those things appear. So just to go back, so brief cap, I believe chapter 12 gives us signs as the things that Jesus did, how the nation of Israel was split, how Satan was always trying to get those. And when those signs become those road marks on the road to God's plan, as those signs become visible, the nation of Israel is supposed to react. I believe when they see the two witnesses rise from the dead and ascend into heaven, that should be a red flag for them. And when they see the abomination of desolation happen. But I want to just go back I know we go through a lot of hoops of trying to nail down all of this stuff. And like I say, this is sometimes gets a little crazy. I hope I'm not losing anybody. But I'd like to go back just a couple of verses of verse 11. This is talking about the people. It says, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. I always try to leave some application in when we do a lesson. I'd love to talk to you about this more, and there's a whole bunch more of implications as we get into the woman who rides the beast and who that is, and why does the Antichrist choose to declare himself to be God in the temple of God for the Jews? Well, I think he does that because he wants to rule the Jewish nation. But there's a whole lot of stuff there. But I want to just bring it back to how these Jews overcame him. The first thing they did is they overcome him by the blood of the Lamb. I just want you to know there is no way for us to overcome this world or the Satan than by the blood of Jesus Christ. That's the gateway that we all have to walk through. We all have to be found in Christ or there is no salvation, period. What's the next thing? The next thing is it says they overcome by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. Just so you know, your testimony is the things that you do. Your testimony is the things that we believed. As these people are seeing these signs and seeing the things that are going on, they believed them to be true and they reacted. As we believe that Jesus Christ has come and died for us and that he's given us, he's put us on this planet to go and share the gospel with people, we should be reacting to that. How are we reacting to it? Are we obeying the things that he says? First thing, we've got to have the blood of the Lamb. Nobody gets through without. But the next thing we have, if we have the blood of the Lamb, we're going to have a testimony. Because we believe that Jesus Christ is true and the things he told us was true. And I love the last one. And it says, they did not love... And they did not love their lives to the death. What does Jesus Christ ask us to be? He says, what God wants from you is to be a living sacrifice. It's like an oxymoron. I want you to be a dead, alive person. Dead to sin, but alive to Christ. And it's funny, the same way these guys are overcoming this world is the same way we have to do it. It's the same way that anybody who comes to Christ, we have to be covered in the blood. As we're covered in the blood, there's going to be a testimony as we believe the things that God is true and that God is requiring of us a life that is dedicated to him. Dead to myself, dead to my desires, dead to the things that I want to do in this world, and alive to him. So as these guys are going through all this, all of these road marks, all of these pictures that God as the nation of Israel accepts that Jesus Christ was their Messiah and they see all these things coming about, as they're watching all this stuff, there should be signs that be popping out to them. Man, something's different. Man, this guy just said he was God. Woo woo, gotta go. I'm out. I don't know, did you say bounce? I don't know, they might. I gotta bounce, I'm out of here. But as they go, if you guys have any questions, if you guys are looking at this and what this implies, I think this implies later on, as we'll see in chapter 14, that the woman who rides the beast is actually the nation of Israel that does not believe in Jesus Christ. So we're going to see those people as they come out. Jackie will be here to fix any mistakes or any questions. But I hope that kind of makes a little bit of sense. And that I pray that ultimately as these guys saw the signs or see the signs in the road, I pray that you guys are looking for the same. Our God's coming back. Our God is on the move. Our God is looking to and fro over this world to see those who will stand in the gap. And I pray that we see the signs and I pray that we do just like these guys do, that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of our testimony, and that we didn't love our lives to the death. So that's all I got to say about that. So will you guys pray with me? Will you stand with me and pray?